Have a special moment and what I call is a courageous conversation. And it's such a privilege to do this. Like over the years we've had some panel of dads that were able to interview and just glean from some experiences and some of their knowledge. And this time around we thought it's very fitting that our lead pastor gets to be in the hot seat. So today I encourage you to not switch off, but there'll be some moments and just, I mean, we've asked him to be vulnerable. We've asked him to be real. We've asked him to be authentic. And so he's going to share his heart today. And we want to honour you, Pastor Tony, if you can get on stage with Pastor Daryl as well. And Pastor Daryl's going to actually do the interviewing. So why don't we stand to our feet and welcome them.
Well, happy Father's Day, by the way, if I haven't already said it. But today I get the great opportunity of sitting having an up and close, courageous conversation with our pastor of the house, Tony. Pastor Tony, I'll let you take a sip first before you go to start answering questions. I didn't get the spotlight in position. The interrogation. Mike, you might be able to help with that one. Okay, as you know, Pastor Tony is the lead pastor of our church. He's also a father and grandfather. So we're going to ask him a few questions just on some certain topics that are of interest to help enlighten you on the type of person he is and the type of father he is for the house. Okay, today we're going to go around and ask some questions on the topics of life, love, leadership, health, mental health, spiritual stuff, and about fatherhood. This will give us an insight and a glimpse of just what a lead pastor has to go through, both in and outside the church. So let's start. How are you?
How am I? I'm okay. I've been sick for the last week, actually. So I'm kind of almost recovered from that. So I'm doing pretty good.
How are you really?
Yeah. Psychological questions. I'm doing well. Thank you, Daz.
That's good. Okay, we're going to delve into the personal area at the moment. So can you tell us a little bit about you? Some of the things that people may not be aware of that makes you who the person you are, the likes, dislikes, or favourite things in your life.
Okay, cool. Number one, you probably most know this about me, I like being in control. So this process is not very easy for me. I'm used to preaching, teaching, and controlling the stage with what I do every Sunday. So being in the hands of my wingman here, Pastor Daryl, and having him ask me questions that some are random and some I've been given a little bit of a heads up for is a little bit nerve-wracking for me. So I like being in control, and I think most pastors do, and certainly most senior pastors do, because that's what leadership does. Leadership directs things. What do I like? I like me time. So I like to get away. I don't get it very often, but I like to get away and just have me time. That means when I leave the office and church and my responsibilities here and go home, I like to just go home. And we live kind of 35 minutes away from here, down at Tambourine. And so when you get home, I kick back, I relax, and I just enjoy my own time, my own space, relaxing. I enjoy a good cheese board. is what I enjoy. Kicking back and just eating some really nice food, finger food like that, is really quite special. Pork belly, how good is pork belly? Can I have some tonight? Pork belly would be one of my absolute favourites, as you can tell. So I'm loving food and loving pork belly, and I love very much getting out with the friends that I have, and just spending some special moments at a restaurant, at a cafe, and just enjoy doing life with people outside the parameters of, I guess, church responsibilities and ministry and leadership, just to have spaces where we can be in a safe place with people and enjoy life and just be ourselves. I enjoy all of that.
Oh, that's great. I've got one other thing that you probably haven't touched on just yet. Do you want to tell us about this?
Well, that's a cricket bat. Yeah, and this bat has the names of two very special people on there. The first name is Ian Healy, and the second name is Jeff Thompson. And I had it signed by Ian Healy because when I was younger, a long time ago, I was a sportsman. I was a cricketer. Grew up playing cricket. Grew up in Gladstone. If you grew up in Gladstone, you played cricket, rugby league, hockey. You did something. Very much a sports community. So I grew up playing cricket. I was a reasonable cricketer. A young fella, I was captain of a team that Ian Healy was in for a Queensland team. I held a world record for 13 years, which is something not many people know. And so Ian Healy's name on this bat is very special to me. The other name, Jeff Thompson, he was one of my legend heroes. Grew up watching him on TV and all that era of cricketer, Rod Marsh, Dennis Lilly, all those kind of names. And one day Jeff Thompson came into our cafe here and was sitting in the cafe having lunch with his son. Pastor Darrell came to me and said, "I think that's Tomo out in the foyer in the cafe." I said, "Can't be." Walked out and it was Jeff Thompson. So I went up, struck up a conversation with him. If you know anything about Jeff Thompson, he doesn't like talking to anybody and at all in terms of that stuff. But I approached him and just chatted with him and told him he's played cricket with Ian Healy, and we got into the story. And when we got into the story, we were like best mates in no time at all. So I said to him, "I've got this cricket bat in my office that Heels has signed. Do you think you could put your moniker on it?" So he signed it for me, got a photo with him. Just a wonderful day. So I love this bat. Sits in my office, pride of place, and I intend just to collect a few more signatures on it of people that are special to me. So I love sport.
I also heard you have a record of sorts.
I did, yeah. My world record was I bowled in a two-innings game of cricket, so two innings of batting. I bowled 13 batsmen out for one run. The world record was that I bowled five in a row. So five bowled in a row. It was broken 13 years later by a young English cricketer who bowled six in a row. So that was my claim to fame.
Wow, that's awesome. Okay, what was your father like and the relationship you had with him? And what are some fatherly tips you can come away with from him?
Wow. My father was he was a hard-working man. He was a railway man. He was a guard in the railway and an electrical instructor in his latter years. And I just remember Dad being a hard-working man. What I love about my dad was a man's man. He was a tall man. He was 6'4", so he was tall in physique and stature, but he was also tall in my world. We looked up to him, not just naturally, but we looked up to him in every way. Dad was, he was not a Christian until I was about 16 years of age. So prior to becoming a Christian, he lived like most typical dads. He played hard, he lived hard. He was a heavy drinker and a heavy gambler. And the day he came to Christ, it turned his life around, it turned our family around. He was just real, and that's what I loved about him. If he had an opinion, he was going to tell you, and he was going to share it, whether it was about politics, whether it was about church, whatever it was about. But his influence on me, particularly, and all of us as kids, is around family. My dad was a man of few words, Like if you rang him on the phone, he'd say, hello, how are you, Tone? You had a good week? Good, I'll pass you to Mother. And he'd hand me over to Mum to have a chat, and Mum would talk for about 3 hours. And that's kind of how it worked. But Dad was a man of few words until he got to a family event. Every time he got to a family event, he would tell his testimony briefly, and he would thank the Lord for everything that he'd done to save his soul, and he'd sing his favourite song, which was, He Brought Me Out of the Miry Clay, He Put My Feet on the Rock to Stay. He'd sing that song, and then he'd give us all a little chat about family. And he would just say, family is the most special thing in the world, and make sure you love your family, look after your family. And the older that Dad got, because this is the thing about dads. Dads, you see them through different seasons. So I remember Dad when I was young. I remember Dad when I was a teenager. I remember Dad when I left home. And then I remember Dad into his aging years. And there's different pictures that I have of my dad, and the older that he got, the more focused and treasured he became about his family, and more purposeful he became about being that person and that father figure and that example for our family, and we love him dearly for that. So not so much of a dad that sat down and gave verbal tips, more one of living it by example and then reminding us as a family where we gathered.
Awesome. Well, this next question, it may cover a little bit of that as well. As a father and a grandfather, how has God influenced the way that you fathered your children?
Yeah, well, God's influenced everything for me in terms of seeing the father heart of God and how he loves us, how he engages with us, accepts us. He doesn't push us away. It doesn't matter where we've been, what we've done. God has always got an open heart and an open house towards us. So those kind of truths that I see in God's word, I've tried to the best of my ability to live out with my family in terms of I will love them unconditionally because they are my family. There's nothing I wouldn't do for them because they are my family. Nothing I wouldn't give for them because they are my family. And so the truths of the father heart of God, I want very much, and I think they should very much be reflected in every family.
Have there been any other fathers that you know of that have been inspiring or influencing?
Yeah, I get inspired by all kinds of fathers. There's been a few that have been very special to me over the years. One passed away just recently that was a dear friend of mine. He was a bookkeeper of our church. His name is David Stickland, and he was my first board member, and he was very much a part of my world as I was a young father, and he modelled so much of what it is to be family and to be there for your family through the different seasons of life. So David would be one that sticks out, but I could say that of any father in the house here. I'm inspired by guys that just stick with it and do the job and, you know, to do what fathering is all about. So, yeah.
So true, so true. Okay, we're going to touch on family a little bit. So what do you enjoy most about being a father, grandfather?
What do I enjoy most about being a father and a grandfather? I think I enjoy this stage of fathering more than I did the young stages. You know, when like the babies are on stage before and the boys changing the nappies and running around with the prams, that was not particularly a natural season for me in terms of being a father. I mean, understanding that I grew up in an era of fathering, like they talk now about being present, you know, fully in present and engage with your children, for your children and whatnot. When I was a father and a young father, you had your work, you had your career, you had your business, but you also had the family, and you had to hold the tension of all of those things. There was no such thing as taking a family day off. There was no such thing as taking a day off, you know, for the children back in those days. So Cheryl very much looked after the children in those early stages, and bore the weight of that. For me, very much my focus and attention and time was in what I was doing in ministry in church world, which caused a little bit of tension around our world in terms of, you know, sometimes just not being available, not being there as much as I probably and should have been. And looking back, you can feel certain guilt about that, but I've done honestly the best I could do in each season. I feel much more equipped in this season to be a father and a grandfather, to be more present in their world, to be helping them, to be directing them, to be funding them and financing them and helping them when they need help. I find this flow much easier than I did the flow of the early stages of fathering. But I love very much being a grandfather. We have six grandchildren that are just the absolute joys of our life, the moments that we get to spend with them and to have them around our world is just such a privilege. They do bring such joy, and they're so much better than kids because you can give them back, and it's just wonderful. I absolutely love it.
Awesome. Kids are great. As men, we naturally think we like to fix things. When we see something that's broken and we want to provide solutions, when we see these things, problems, we just automatically feel like we need to repair them. Sometimes that's not necessarily the case. Can you talk about a time where you couldn't provide a solution, and how did you cope, and what did you do instead?
Yeah, I am a fixer. It's what I do. I fix things. I fix problems. I address issues. I bring things into alignment. It's part of what you learn to do as a leader in church world and in pastoring. And that works okay in certain areas, but one of the things to realise is you can't fix everything. Like, I can't fix people. It's hard. I had to learn that as a pastor. I just can't fix some people. They're responsible to help fix themselves. And very much so as a father when it comes to your children and they're growing up and they're encountering life and things sometimes don't work out or don't go according to script, according to the plan of what you may have expected. It was in those moments when my children found themselves in spaces where they were vulnerable, where they were in danger and life wasn't working, that was very hard to cope with as parents, as a father, because I would naturally want to fix it. So I fixed what I could, and what I couldn't fix I had to trust God with and leave that with God, but always be there for my children. And I want my children to know that I will always be there, we will always be there for them, in and through every season of life. So no matter what the brokenness may be. And this is difficult for pastors and pastors' kids. And nobody understands this unless you are a pastor, being a pastor, or you're a PK, pastor's kid. The environment that our children grow up in, the fishbowl that it is. And sometimes it's not been easy for our children growing up in church life. Some of the things they see, they're exposed to. Sometimes some of the things that people have done. And they get very much affected by that. So they have that aspect. But then they have their own lives sometimes that, well, things just don't work and things break. And, you know, we all expect, or I think a lot of people in church world expect, that everyone's just going to have a perfect life and everything's going to go according to the plan all the time. But that often doesn't happen. And when it doesn't happen, we've still got to make sense of our faith. We've still got to walk it out and work it out and help each other. And so I found it most difficult when my children were really struggling or they were in danger and I couldn't fix it, but I could do what I could do and just had to leave the rest up to God and hold the tension of, it's okay, it's a little ugly, but it's all right, it's okay. And it doesn't have to be perfect. And what a sweet release that was for me as a pastor when it comes to family life and family world and church world. It doesn't have to be perfect. It's okay. It's okay to be ugly for a little while. And in church seasons, we've had seasons where it's been a bit ugly, and that's okay. Put the makeup on, make it as good as you can, but understand it's a little ugly, but it will work out. Life is never about a moment. It's a journey. It's never a chapter. It's a story. And every beautiful story has chapters that are a little bit difficult and challenging, and that's what makes the story of everybody's life so rich.
It does. Okay, we're going to touch on relationships and marriage. I'll let you have a sip of your tea here.
Something a little stronger.
Now, Pastor Tony, he's been married for 40 years.
40 years!
Doing well.
Wow.
Going strong. Living courageous. He's been senior pastor for 33 years. He's a father, grandfather. What advice would you give us about handling conflict in the area of relationships and marriage?
What advice would I give in handling conflict in the area
Tread carefully. In relationships and marriage.
Okay. Conflict is one of those things that we're all going to have, we all have. I've heard people say about their marriage relationship, we've never had an argument all of our lives. And I look at them and think, well, who even are you? Really? Seriously? And I know that does happen, and I just think, you are amazing. Let me bow down and kiss your feet. The truth is, for most of us, the way it works is two imperfect people come together. And they give their vows, they say, I do, and they begin this journey of a married relationship. And in that process of the journey, there's so much junk to work out about yourself, about your expectations, about the way things are working out and developing. And so conflict is inevitable. It's going to happen. I'm a reasonably strong personality. So when you've got a reasonably strong personality involved in a relationship, there are going to be some sparks that fly. And so Cheryl and I do have those very creative conversations from time to time. And my advice to anybody about conflict in a marriage is this, is you don't have to fix everything. You don't have to make everything absolutely right in terms of your relationship with things and talking things out. You don't have to always win. You must fight fair. You must fight fair. And you must remember that your words will be remembered. Remember, your words will be remembered. So what you say will come back to haunt you and hurt you. And so you need to be very careful in the way you communicate in the heat of the moment, which is a real skill in developing that emotional maturity to be able to do that. So I think that being married 40 years, we're getting better and better at that. It doesn't take us as long to resolve the disputes. There are explosions that happen, but it doesn't take us as long to resolve. And we just don't fight over things that we just used to fight over. You kind of look at each other and think, what the heck? Like, really? Does it matter? Is it going to matter at the end of the day about that issue? So there's so much that you find yourself getting involved in and a conversation or an argument with someone about that, it's just not worth it. It's really not worth it, so don't even go there. Fight the battles you have to fight, and the others, there's a lot you can just let go through to the keeper, would be my advice. In terms of church life, like any other family, there's conflict that happens in church life from time to time. I don't like conflict. I don't look for conflict. I don't invite conflict, but I certainly don't ignore it. And sometimes I'm put in a position where it's necessary, where it has to happen because of the posture that someone may be taking towards us. And one thing that you need to know about me as a senior pastor is I will be extremely protective of this. As I am of my family, I'll be extremely protective of this. That's cost me from time to time when I've had to have very strong conversations with some individuals in regards to the way they're either behaving or treating or whatever our church. And those moments aren't easy going through that, but they are unavoidable conversations to have. And I think there's a certain security in a natural family when they know that their father is going to be there to not only provide but protect. And also in a church family, that we are here also to provide, but we're also here to protect the church family as the Bible instructs us to be aware of those that come in to cause trouble. And sometimes that does happen in church life. And so I'm very strong in terms of that.
That's great. That's very good. Okay, we're going to touch on a subject now that it sort of goes under the radar, but it is a very, very important part of understanding and making sure we do acknowledge it, is mental health. Mental health for fathers. And it's like, if you're not aware, this Thursday is actually Are You Okay Day. is where guys can be recognised, and we can also make note of mental health and how important it is for the guys, and that it's okay to speak up. It's okay not to be in a great place, but as long as you're making steps to improve on that. So for many of us, our fathers have been symbols of unwavering strength. We are providers, we are protectors, we are problem solvers, we are fixers. And I've known you a long time, and life's tensions have been almost out to the maximum at times, and other times it's not as bad. But the endless pressure is always there as fathers, and we don't reach out emotionally for mental health support. In this area, how have you managed pressure? If you could give us some examples.
Pressure is, I think, something that I have learned to manage better over the years. In the early years, it was hard because I'd never been there before. I'd never been tested in the ways I was being tested in the early stages of my ministry. But now that I'm, you know, sort of 33 years in as a senior pastor and 40 years in as a husband and father figure, it's... I've been to many spaces before, and so when challenges come, it's kind of like David in the Old Testament when he faced Goliath. He said, well, I've been here before because I protected the sheep from the lion and the wolf and or whatever it was, bear, and the lion and the bear, and he was drawing on the strength of past victories. And so there's a sense of when I come into pressure moments, I think to myself, I've been here before, I know what to do. I know what to do. Number one, don't make quick decisions. Don't make quick decisions. Too many quick decisions are made when things go wrong and things are not working. And people make life-changing decisions that will change every aspect of their life in a moment of weakness, in a moment of struggle, a moment of failure, whatever it might be. And so I always think, okay, don't make any quick decisions here. Just slow down. Just be in this moment. So in terms of mental health and approaching that and approaching pressure, I remind myself that I've been through some stuff before. This will be okay. And I think that's the advantage of maturity and old age is, you know, life throws up its challenges. It comes, it happens. And I don't get stressed out as much as I used to about those things that pop up and even the dramatic things, because I think at the end of the day, in 5 or 10 years' time, this will just be a little speed bump. That's all it's going to be. So relax and go through the moment.
Awesome. And how do you do self-care, and how do you know when you're emotionally and spiritually filled?
How do I do self-care? Self-care is something we're trying to learn to do better and better as a team, and trying to be more purposeful in that. And once again, self-care is one of those trendy terms that have really only come on the radar, you know, in the last decade. There was no such thing as self-care when I was young. It was just work till you sleep, and that was it. And now there's still a lot of guys that are operating in that zone. I think we're getting better at stopping and having a little bit of space, whatever it might be, whatever fills the tank. And so I know when I've had enough. If you know me, if you're a friend of mine, if you spend time with me socially, you'll know that Tony has a limit. And when Tony hits that limit, it's obvious to everybody. The shutters just go down. They just literally go down right in front of you. I can be sitting at the table, fully engaged, talking and laughing, and then I'm done. I'm just done. My screensaver's on, and I'm just ready to go home. So I know when I need to go home. I know when I need to stop is what I do. So self-care for me is getting some moments like that. It's a little break that might happen every now and then. It's a change of environment, a change of scenery. It's mowing the lawn, just getting on the ride-on mower when it works and just riding into the sunset. Mowing the lawn is just a beautiful thing. It's so relaxing, and that's my happy place, is just doing that kind of thing. I enjoy that because it's a change of scenery from here, doing that kind of thing in the natural environment. It's good.
Well, this next question is a bit closer to the heart. As some may have known, like we both share the fact that both our fathers have passed away recently in the last couple of years, and we both share a similar journey about grief on... in that area. What I'd like to ask is if you can unpack some thoughts around handling grief with how you've dealt with it through the loss of your dad.
Okay. Can I start by saying our hearts go out to everybody here today that is still on a grief journey. For all those that have lost their dads or don't have a dad involved in their world, or you've lost someone special, grief is such a deep, deep journey. I know the textbook stages of grief, and from the textbook, it's very different from the textbook to the physical journey of grief when you go through it yourself. Grief is actually a healthy thing. It's a healthy thing because it speaks of the value that this person was in your world. So when you have someone like your father pass away, and for me that was the first person really, really, really close. I mean, I've lost grandparents, and they were close, but my father much closer. And so losing Dad was, for all of our family, a big grief journey. I don't think I really identified with the psychological stages of the grief process as they're outlined by the experts, the five stages. I didn't really go through those different stages. I kind of found my own flow when it came to grief. And what I tried to do was very much take moments just to keep remembering my dad. And so his photo sits in front of me, right where I sit in the lounge room on the recliner, which is my favourite place in the world to be, on my recliner. And Dad's photo is right there. And it kind of pierces your heart, particularly in the early stages. I think for the first 12 months, every time I saw it, it just pierced my heart because he was no longer here. And he's a huge part of all of our world as a family for Mum and all of us. And it was difficult. It was difficult because we lost Dad in COVID. What was really difficult was that of all the funerals I've done over the years, and I've done hundreds of funerals for people in church world and church life and then strangers, and you know, they've all had 100 people, 200 people, 300 people, 400 people at them, and been a great celebration of life. For one of the lives that I would have loved to have celebrated so much, it was so limited because it happened right at the start of COVID in April 20, and we were only allowed to have 10 people at the graveside, and that was including the funeral director. So we had 9 members of our family. A lot of family just couldn't come. And being not allowed to gather for a moment like that was really challenging. And that kind of grief moment that started right from there and those stages was, it really did, it hit me hard. I cried more than I've ever cried. I'm not a crier. I consider myself reasonably resilient. I'm a typical male. I don't talk about my feelings to everybody. I have a small select group of people that I open my heart to in that way. But I just found myself having moments where I would enjoy the special memories of Dad and shed some tears. And we as a family take the moments that we can to gather and go and visit Dad's grave. I never thought I'd be the person that would want to do that or need to do that, but I have a deep-seated need to do that, to go and just stand at his graveside, tell him I love him. And that's special. It's really special to do that. And 2 years on, 2.5 years on, 2 years, 5 months on, I still feel the grief. This morning I put a post on Facebook and I said, he held my hand. When I was little, and I held his hand when he passed. And what a privilege it was to hold his hand and to be in the room as Dad was in his last stages. Michael, my brother, was there when Dad actually passed away. And it was, it's been a big 2 years. It really has. I've not been in depression with it. but it certainly grabs my heart. And because he was and is still such a big person of influence in my world. I grew up in the shadow of my dad. When I was a cricketer, I was a cricketer because Dad was a cricketer. Michael was a cricketer. And I was always referred to, whenever I got my name in the paper and for the results, I was always Tony Sorey, son of well-known Valleys cricket player George Sorey. So I was always in his shadow in that sense, which we used to laugh about and joke about when we were young. But now I'm so proud of that. And so I put that on Facebook today with some photos of our family and whatnot. So my thought about grief is this, is it's different for everybody, and just go with your flow. Cry your tears. Have your memories. Stand at the grave every day if you have to. It doesn't matter. It's your journey. It's nobody else's journey. And it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks about that. Grief is a way of cleansing your heart, and it's a way of just, I think, honouring the person that you've lost. And so don't be afraid of grief. I don't think I really understood grief until I lost my dad. I'd counselled many people through it. I'd been there with many people through their loss, but I never really understood in my heart what they went through until I went through that with my dad. It's a journey every one of you will go on in life, somewhere along the journey of life. And so my thought is this, is just hug and hold the people in your world that are special to you, because they won't be there forever. And today's Father's Day, and your dad won't be there forever. As clumsy as you think he is, as grumpy as you think he is, as irrelevant and outdated as you think he is, let me say that there will come a day when you wished you could have that one more conversation, that one more moment, that one more just spending some moments together and having a cup of coffee. You'll wish you could have those. And so grief, it's just tears, it's memories, and we all need to find a safe space where we can just let it out. Just let it out. And I think one of the things I did find challenging, I want to say this, I found it quite challenging to continue to lead church while I was going through that. I didn't find that easy. Standing up here and preaching in those early stages, and the team were great. They gave me some time to myself, but I didn't find it easy being strong here when in here I was really fragile. And that was a difficult time, but I think coming through those moments also caused a certain strength to develop. So I'm just so thankful for my dad and my family. And yeah, that's about all I have to say on that subject.
Thank you for sharing that with us. Time's starting to get away of us a little bit. I'll come to one last question as Pastor Marischal comes up. What courageous words would you like to say to the church in this current season?
You know, I think so much has happened in our world in the last few years. It's affected every aspect of life for us. It's affected our economic world. It's affected personally people's businesses and careers and workplaces. People's relationships have been affected. People's health have been affected. Churches have been affected. And it's been a ridiculous 2.5 years for leadership teams like ours to guide church through and navigate a very challenging season. And my cry for the church is just to be the church. While there's so much fear around our community and world today, I think the one thing the church needs to be is that fearless place where faith will be really practical. Faith will be a faith that works. Faith will be a faith that doesn't think it has all the answers, but what it does have is absolute trust in an ever-present God who's going to turn all things out for good. I don't know how God does that, but I know that's the promise of his word, and I believe that that's been the journey of our lives, is that God turns all things to good. And I think right now what the world needs and what the church needs is for the church just to continue being a strong, brave, beautiful, bold church that we should be as part of God's church. And although it's kind of like church has had, and this conversation is very much a pastoral conversation all around our Western world at the moment. It's like, have you ever had a bad haircut? Like, I know Cheryl gave our son Jared a bad haircut once when she thought that she would be the home hairdresser and got the old, you know, what do you call those things, shear things out and just started and went shoo and straight down, right down to skin almost, right there in the middle of his head. That's a pretty bad haircut. But the thing about bad haircuts, if you look at him today, he's a handsome dude sitting over there, got a full head of hair, and that is just a distant memory. It's what it's like in church at the moment. We've had a bad haircut. A lot of churches have had a bad haircut, but it'll grow back again. It will grow back again. Just be strong, be resilient, be brave, and lean into God. Keep a practical faith, and don't make dumb and stupid decisions when you're in those hard moments. Make sure you have people around you that can guide you, direct you, pastors that you can talk to. If I could give my number one bit of advice to every person in church, it's this: pastors are here to help you. Pastors are here to help you. The Bible says we are responsible for your souls. We are responsible for the condition of the church, the flock. And so that's what we're here for. And I can vouch for the people that are a part of our pastoral team that you are constantly on their mind. You are constantly on their hearts. They pray for you over and over again. And everything they do is for you. That is the absolute truth that works within our team. And I thank all of our team for what you do. And any more questions, or do I just say Happy Father's Day to all the dads today? Happy Father's Day to all the dads today. Thank you for listening to me waffle for a few moments. God bless you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Pastor Tony, for that very vulnerable conversation. We are just so appreciative of the way you handled that. And I believe most of us, if not all of us, didn't have a, you know, dry eye today. And I think that we have very much gleaned from some experiences and tips and advice and everything like that that we have got for you. So we just honour you. We thank you for being the father of this house. We thank you that you are strong, you are courageous, you are brave. You may not feel like it at some times, but you have all these people who's got your back. And so we just honour you and thank you for today. And Pastor Darrell, thank you for, you know, doing the conversation today. I hope that was a good thing for you, being women. Can you even see, like, I mean, they didn't talk about what they're wearing today, but obviously, you know, that's how close they are. So I just want to get Jared and Danielle up here, please. Just say a few words about your dad.
Here you go, Dad. Happy Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to everyone else who's a father. I want to thank you, Dad. You've been my best support. We all know that. You taught me to play cricket. We threw balls. You know, you were present. So that's all I want to say. I love you.
Love you, Jeff.
I love getting up on stage as a surprise. Dad, we love you to the ends of the earth. You know you're everything to me and my kids sitting up the back there. You're a father to all of us, and I want to say thank you.
Right. You want to give him a hug? I'm getting the eagle.
Love you. Thank you.
Okay. We do have another one, and Rebecca's obviously in Melbourne, but I'm sure she is going to give you a call today and wish you a happy Father's Day. And this is just a little something to say thank you for answering all those questions. But why don't we stand to our feet? That concludes our Father's Day presentation this morning, and we do hope that you have gleaned something from that and it helped you as a church to get a glimpse from what the senior pastor of this church goes through. And just, you know, give him a big hug today if you can. So right now, why don't we just take a moment to say hello to everyone, and we're going to have some hospitality so all the dads can avail themselves. And thank you to our online community this morning. We just thank you for being patient with us. I know we're going a little bit longer, but I hope that helped you today. Have a great week.